This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to the SME Showcase section of our Business Masterclass show. Joining us now is Jethro O'Brien, CEO and co-founder of TradeSafe. So, Jethro, tell us a little bit about where you come from. Give us a little bit of background for everybody out there to get to know you a little better.
First of all, I'm not an entrepreneur.
Okay.
I was brought up with go to school, go to varsity, make a career.
That doesn't make you not an entrepreneur. We were all told that.
So it's been a sharp learning curve. And I guess what TradeSafe was started out of a need, a simple social need. And it was so many South Africans who are being defrauded and scammed, especially in your commerce sectors, your classified sectors. Mm. And so we just, the partners and I just got together and we just decided that, listen, we had to do something. Mm. And that's how TradeSafe was actually born. So it's been running for about 3 years now. We put some serious resources into it about a year ago. And what TradeSafe is, it's an online escrow platform. Escrow is where an independent third party in a transaction between a buyer and a seller, the escrow party will be the ones that safeguards the buyer's funds in trust until the seller delivers to the buyer what was contracted. And then once all contractual obligations have been fulfilled, does the seller deliver to the buyer? We release the funds to the seller. So that's the process.
So, yeah, I mean, escrow processes, I think, globally. I mean, escrow is not a new concept. And it is actually, I guess, internationally, escrow is quite an accepted norm. I mean, in fact, they use it for very large transactions. If you're buying and selling property in the States, for example, you use escrow accounts, etc. I think in the South African context, we've got quite used to the concept of using an attorney's trust account in much the same way for large property transactions. But other than an attorney to assist you on a large property transaction, that's quite a, let's call it a restricted market, or let's call it layer of the market being the property transaction. Attorneys always have had the opportunity to offer the services that you're obviously offering, but it's always been very laborious, very time consuming, and from my cursory preview of this world, they generally didn't want to get involved because property transactions they could understand and they could manage their risks, because there is risk associated with this in terms of managing this. And because of the nature of attorneys, if you had an attorney acting for you when you were, for example, buying and selling a car, and you wanted to use them to do an escrow trust account type of arrangement, suddenly they were finding themselves in the middle of bad car deals. So they ran for the hills. And of course, there's always, like anything, attorneys only ever see the bad transactions in life. Unfortunately, they often get dragged into the nasties. So I'm sure they would have a pretty jaded view on some of the types of transactions. They're not looking at the 99 that go right. They always end up having to deal with the one that's gone wrong. So by nature, approached on the similar type of transaction as for their trust account, I could see why they would shy away from it. It makes logical sense. So, I mean, you've obviously run into some real, let's call them real life challenges with an escrow type of arrangement. If I can, let's just take an example like buying and selling a car. I mean, I think that's one that virtually every South African has had to face. And I must tell you, I think there's lots of us out there that if we had the choice of selling a car privately or selling it via a dealership, we would immediately say, well, I'm selling it via the dealership because I don't want to have to deal with the challenges of non-payment. Mm. Now you've solved that problem for us. Just run us through a little bit of a, let's call it a transaction time frame of how you do a car transaction, just so that people can get a feel for what you do.
Or the other way of asking this question is, at what point would anyone need TradeSafe?
Okay, where can I start? When you'd want to use TradeSafe is when you don't know the other party or you can't trust the other party. You don't know the guy from Bar Soap, so you go into a transaction with them. There must be a surety. So TradeSafe was built for that purpose. It incentivizes people to be honest. And if the money is in the middle, It prompts the buyer and the seller to be quick. It prompts them to be speedily in their actions. Mm-hmm. So, for example, with a vehicle sale, whatever, a user wants to sell his vehicle can log into TradeSafe, creates an account, creates a transaction. He's identified a potential buyer, or a buyer has identified him, and the first thing they do is that they specify the terms of the transaction. They go into the details about the vehicle, the model, the make, color, defects, possible defects. They can upload documentation, photos, any other ancillary documentation. And then it's up to the other party to actually accept those terms. It's an actual contract that they're accepting. And once they accept it, there's a contract that is locked. They cannot make any amendments. The onus is now on the buyer to actually deposit the funds with TradeSafe in terms of the agreements. Now obviously this is where we come in. We have to actually verify that the funds are bona fide. And there's so many payment scams in South Africa these days. Is the reason for our existence is to validate the actual payments that come through. And once that is done, then we notify both parties via SMS emails. And then the seller obviously has to make do and deliver the vehicle.
Okay.
So in this context, though, Joshua, does this then exclude, say, me trying to buy something on these, you know, e-commerce platforms like your Bido buys and things like that? Or can TradeSafe still work where I don't trust some of those folks over there?
Yeah, so you can use TradeSafe in one or two manners. One is the ordinary man in the streets who can just use the websites and then buy and sell whatever commodity or whatever need or service he wishes to transact. The second option is obviously our payment mechanism. We've got an API, and that is currently being integrated. It's a plug-and-play solution, basically, so developers can actually plug in our technology, our software, mm-hmm. so that they can make use of it as a payment platform to their customers. So in terms of bid or buy, they're pretty most of these guys bid or buy, they've got a pretty credible refund policies in that, and they're pretty on the ball. Mm-hmm. But it's the other what's the word? Sites that's difficult to gauge.
Your countries.
TradeSafe was started because that's where we wanted to play in the first place. Was the classified markets, and there's so many scamsters on those classified platforms. What happened was our strategy actually took a turn, and now we've actually started targeting small businesses, which has proved very, very profitable for us.
Cool. Mm.
And I would imagine there's also, particularly in the service business, there must be a fairly large call for your services there. I mean, I can recall quite vividly a few years back, being down in KZN, and we had a friend of ours that we met. We're going to meet down on the south coast, and we called them and said we're going to meet. You know, we'll meet up at wherever they were going to stay. And the guy said to me, "No, come rather to," and he gave me a different location. And we got there, and here they were. And I said, "But I thought you were staying at X Hotel." And he said, "Yeah, well, so did we. We booked. We paid, and we arrived, and there is no hotel." And I said, "But there was a hotel." And he said, "Yeah, the hotel was apparently scheduled for demolition. They were doing a whole rebuild, a new development, etc., was being put in place. And the scam that year was sell out December to everybody for a hotel that no longer existed." Okay.
And classic scam.
And they got caught.
That's a perfect example where TradeSafe fits in.
Yeah.
So, for example, if we had the money would actually been returned to you. We've also actually partnered with a young startup. They do rental deposits in the residential accommodation sector.
Mm-hmm.
And when you rent out, if you lease or rent out a place, and you're forced to fork out a deposit, you'll never see that deposit again. That's my own circumstance. So that's where we fit in for that sort of sector, is that we safeguard rental deposits as a offering.
Mr.
I can even see where we were talking about joint ventures earlier. This could be a fail-safe to protect the customer, that fees are first paid into an escrow account with TradeSafe before the other joint venture partner releases it.
Correct.
Totally.
Now, I mean, you started the business. You've obviously gone through some of your growing pains. You're at the three-year mark. What are some of the things that you've learnt as you've started this business? What are some of the things you've learnt?
I think SJ touched on credibility. Massive. If we're not credible, people don't trust us, we don't have a business. Especially when you're talking about multi-million rand transactions.
How do I know my money's safe with TradeSafe?
Well, it's a question that pops up often, but I mean, it takes one slip up from us to destroy our business forever.
And
it's so easy for word to get out into the markets, into blogs and that. And so far, we're doing actually quite a good job. But yeah, credibility. So how did we build credibility? Was through certain partnerships with customers, and like eBlock Watch, for example, is like a institution that protects the ordinary rights of South Africans. Those are the kinds of partnerships that we sought. But the most important thing for me was to climb up the search results on Google in order to be on the first page. So when a user enters in South Africa escrow, I wanted to be on the first results. And that was quite difficult. So how we managed to solve that was we actually partnered with another escrow company, which was not necessarily so a competitor. These guys are called Escrow Europe, and what they actually do is software escrow. It's not within our business. And we actually came to an agreement with them, and they said that's all leads and all business you refer, all software escrow related businesses, we would refer to them, and all financial escrow related business, they would refer to us. And so what that helps us is to, with them on board, we actually dominate the top three search results on Google. That's one example.
Yeah. Well, we were looking for it earlier in the first half hour. There's a brilliant example of complementary businesses operating in a very similar market, but with completely different product offerings that would address the different market needs. And it's a hand-in-glove maneuver.
A perfect strategic alliance.
That's a perfect alliance. That's a good one. Now, I'm going to ask you that awful question that we always ask our guests, and most people flinch when I ask it. But it's a question of, if you knew then what you know now, what do you wish somebody had sat on a radio show and told you 3 years ago when you was thinking of starting TradeSafe? What piece of advice could you give to people out there that you've learned, that you've experienced, that if you didn't have to go through it again, it would really, really be nice?
I think the most important thing is that people are in the game for their own gain. When somebody comes up to you and says they've got a brilliant idea or brilliant business model that you can get involved, it's not going to benefit you. I can tell you that now. It's only for the gain of the other party. So choose your partners carefully. Mind who you're going into bed with, and just be very careful. One tiny slip up with any decisions that you make can cost you your business. Yes.
So pick your partners very carefully, pick your alliances carefully, make sure you know and understand what you're committing to and what you need.
So is the gut feel the most important instrument to gauge who you get into bed with? Because often business obviously is about risk taking. You know, there'll come someone who says it's a great idea, and lo and behold, it is indeed a great idea. But, you know, what compass or what instrument do you then use to do due diligence to know that, you know, at least you can get to the bottom of what's behind this great idea?
I think just basic background checks as a start. I mean,
website,
your website, Facebook, Google, what it,
phone number works.
I think that we had an individual who promised us the world was going to do us wonders in Africa. Mm-hmm. Connected here with the Zambian government. Walked out of there. We thought we were going to be millionaires.
Sounds familiar.
The next couple of days, we couldn't even track a profile on this guy. So be very, very careful on your partners. But some partners, obviously, I forgot to mention, some partners are definitely, as SJ mentioned, it has to be mutual beneficial. And I just also shout out to our partners, MeTime, we're in collaboration with Samsung. They're the actual reason why we're here. So to expand our brand awareness, it definitely has its benefits.
And where are you based, Jethro?
Yeah, in Johannesburg.
Okay.
In Johannesburg, yeah. So if I was to take you back and say to you, you know, you obviously started small. What were some of the biggest challenges that you experienced along the way that you kind of can almost say this was this era in the business, and this was perhaps the challenge eras that you experienced as a new entrepreneur? What were some of those challenges?
I think the greatest challenge was, as I mentioned, credibility. The second one was the regulatory environments and the regulatory framework.
We had the Cell CCO on our show once who said, we said to him, how do you find the competitive environment? Who are your competitors? And his response was the regulators and government, not Vodacom and MTN. And I found that quite interesting, that in a very regulated space, the regulatory framework can often cause a major nightmare for you.
Yeah.
What was your experience as an SME?
It was tough. it was challenging. Specifically because there's no rules per se on escrow. There's no regulatory. We didn't know if we fell within the ambit of a money remitter, or if we found within the ambit of a trust company, I think, which we actually do fill. And we actually fell within the Reserve Bank rules with PASA, the Payments Association of South Africa. And that took us 2.5 years to figure out. So that was challenging.
Mm. Are you registered with the FSB?
No, there's no need to. We safeguard the clients' funds. We don't do anything creative with them. We don't invest in financial instruments.
No thinking down the road you may, be a credit provider.
Seems to contradict the service.
So just a question, a practicality. Where do you put all this money when it arrives with you?
Hopefully
not under your pillow.
Do you earn interest on this money?
Well, we produce all the big four South African banks. So we rely on their security and technology. Mm-hmm. Yes. TradeSafe, we take the interest, but that allows us to provide a low transaction fee to the users.
Okay.
And obviously with B2B business, we are amenable to preferential pricing.
Now, what happens if, I'm just thinking here, why have people like your Visas, your MasterCard, why have they not done something like what TradeSafe is doing?
I don't know. I don't.
Who would be your competition down the road?
We've got, I think there's about three financial escrow companies in South Africa at the moment.
Uh-huh.
We are the longest running.
Okay.
We established first.
Market leaders.
I don't know, but if you're going to give it to me, I will take it.
Being on this show, what it's all about.
I was going to say, we'll tweet that as a lead and we'll make it so.
Yes, yeah.
And we collect the royalties.
But what's been very helpful is incubators. The Standard Bank incubator in Rosebank. Just walking through there and then just chatting to the entrepreneurs and the guys there. And then the simple conversation will go like this. So what payment mechanism are you using for your business? Then they'll say PayPal, for example, or whatever South African equivalents. And then I'll tell them, listen, we'll give you a payment mechanism that's half the price and there's an escrow mechanism to it. And then, yeah, then we then the next thing is we're busy plugging into their website. So it's been very, very cool. Yeah,
I can see the huge attraction for particularly a startup entity being able to give the trust and place, you know, that element of trust right there in front of the client and say, yeah, we may be new, but you can trust us because the money is sitting in escrow until we deliver. Your payment is safe. You know, your delivery risk is limited and minimal. So yeah, I can see how that has a huge appeal for the people out there.
Thanks.
Now, how big is the company? How many people are in the company at this point?
Relatively small. Small, less than 10 people. What that allows us, it allows us to be nimble. Mm. I mean, we're quick. We can move. We can adapt very quickly.
Yeah.
Which, as you well know, the banks are struggling with.
Mm.
And, for example, well, that's the very reason why we were initially tailored to classifieds, but we were so quick to adapt and grasp an opportunity in the B2B sector that, that's what made it happen.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the reality is that, to Ellis's question earlier about why isn't, you know, Visa, MasterCard, etc. done something like this, the reality is they probably can, but they probably won't, because it's, you know, it's this analogy of the big rocks that move around in the river. The water flows between the big rocks and there's lots of space in between.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is there's lots of gaps in the market that they just can't get to because their structures and their processes,
the politics
and everything else that goes with it, just make it improbable that success would be achieved. And so they just don't even try it. They just don't even attempt it. They leave it to the entrepreneurs to address those gaps. And yeah, when you get big enough, they'll come to you with a nice check and say, hey, we like your business. We like what you've done. You've now you've put a whole lot of small little gaps together. Now you're a big enough rock to actually buy you, and they'll make you an offer that you can't refuse. So yeah, not necessarily a bad thing.
Look at the size of that smile.
So just in closing, I mean, if you were to, and I mean, I love the way you started off. You said you're not an entrepreneur. I love that description. You're not an entrepreneur, because I think of many people we've seen in studio, you probably are one of the better entrepreneurs. You're grounded and you understand the risks of what you're doing, and you've also used the opportunity to identify a gap in the market that other entrepreneurs struggle with, and that's the principle of trust, to actually make a business of that. You're trading on the lack of trust of other entrepreneurs in your world. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's really using you're an entrepreneur of the entrepreneurial challenges, effectively.
No, thank you.
But, I mean, if you...
And interestingly, we were talking about integrity.
Yeah.
For the better part of our leadership show today. And again, this platform like this is...
It's built on integrity. Absolutely. It's built on everything.
Absolutely.
So, you know, as somebody who's been out there, you obviously worked in other environments prior to starting TradeSafe. What one bit of advice could you give to entrepreneurs out there who are thinking of starting up their own show? You obviously made that jump. Didn't feel like it was a... You didn't wake up and say, hey, or grow up and say, I want to be an entrepreneur. So you've ended up there, it sounds like, almost a reluctant entrepreneur. What piece of advice would you give them in closing?
I'm going back to Elon Musk. He said on a documentary something like that, if something means that much to me, if something means that much to you, you'll do it, even if the odds are against you. And when this was built and the first bit of business came through, it was so important that we made it work. So the perseverance, I'll put it straight, it's perseverance. You have to go through the thick and thin to make it work. And even if other people don't believe it, if other people don't support it, if deep down you know it's going to work, you will make it work. That's the only advice I can give.
Okay, thank you. Well, we wish you and everybody at the TradeSafe environment all the very best. I think it's an important product and market that you're dealing with. Trust in the South African economy is definitely something that we do struggle with, and it's part of a growing economy that people do need to be able to trade effectively and safely with each other. Otherwise, you run into problems. So yeah, it's a key part of the economy.
You're talking like a banker now, right?
Well, you know,
former banker.
Yeah, well, you know what the reality is.
And do people trust banks?
People trust.
Stuck with banks.
It's actually quite scary. I mean, if you think about this, and maybe your final comment on this one, but the trust issue always comes up as, you know, people say, "Well, I trust my bank," and I trust, but why do you trust the bank? And the answer is very simple, because they're so big, and you assume that they will make payment and that you'll be okay. And then when you go to the ATM and put your card in and put in your PIN, that money's going to come out the other side. I always used to love the joke when it was the financial crisis, and people used to say, when you put in your PIN and the thing comes back, insufficient funds, is it you or the bank? You know, like, who is it?
Lehman Brothers.
But yeah, I remember those days. But you've really, you've crossed that Rubicon in TradeSafe in terms of what you do. Mm. I mean, do you see your TradeSafe potentially taking the space the banks traditionally have taken in a small way in the South African economy, potentially?
Where we can become disruptive is in some of your bank instruments, like your letters of credit, bank guarantees, where it's so important in Africa in doing business there. I mean, having a escrow mechanism, it solves all those challenges.
And your plans are about expanding into Africa, seeing you open that door?
Yeah, that's what we're currently busy with.
Okay.
The law of contract's so weak there, so we have to be, I mean, our planning has to be precise. It has to be perfect before we set foot there. But the upside is enormous, especially in that it's going to be augmenting foreign direct investment into Africa from other outside countries, because people will know there's a channel that they can trust in doing business. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. We wish you and your team all the very best, and thank you for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me. Thank you, Richard. Thanks.
Yes, so next up. Let me get myself live. Thank you, Richard. That was very informative. Next up is Transformation Platform. And we're going to back to the beginning, Alice, Richard. It's going to be about the mobile phone. What is the impact that the mobile phone has actually had on us as human beings and on leaders? And what impact will it have in the future? I can't wait for that conversation. We think that we've talked through it, but I'm not sure
I think
have.
We need a whole day for that conversation.
We probably do.
Is this half an hour, Adrian? Come on.
We're going to get it out. Watch. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.